Hello, everyone. Hello, hello.
Do you think it messes with people's perception of time if they're listening to this on a Monday and I say, hey, it's Tuesday again? I noticed that in the last episode. I was like, wait a second.
Well, they may download it on Monday and listen to it on Tuesday so everything would fall in line and be perfect.
Well, whenever you're listening to this, here we are again. Welcome to Scary Dad Podcast, episode 98. As we coast into the number 100 and coasting in through the end of the summer here.
The long, hot summer.
We decided since it's so hot and the air is pretty heavy that we're going to just deal with some heavy stuff.
And don't forget, we recently had a blood moon where everybody said that the world was going to come to an end. The
world always is going to come to
an
end.
Yeah, I know.
Somebody posted earlier today there's a new apocalyptic date and it's like 2040. So
wow.
At least it's like not next week or whatever.
Yeah.
But the end of the world.
It's the end of the world.
So it's August 27th, 2018. And like I said, just having easy and casual conversations just wasn't good enough for Scotty here. He reached out and said, hey,
let's have some fun.
So we're going to be covering in possibly two parts, maybe even three parts, the book of Revelation. For those of you who are not familiar, the Revelation is the last book of the Bible.
Basically the book detailing the end of times.
Yep. And a lot of controversy surrounding that book. Controversy regarding what, you know, what it is, whether it's meant to be taken literally, whether it's allegorical, you know, any number of arguments pro or con as far as that. We're not going to really get into all of that stuff as far as whether it should be canon to the church. It's more along the lines of
this is what's in there.
So many things are inspired by the Revelations.
You'll think that H.P. Lovecraft was one of the disciples.
So many movies, so many books, apocalyptic fiction, everything has, if it's not based in, at least alludes to Revelations. So apocalyptic fiction, H.P. Lovecraft, End of the World, Old Gods, you know, the entire world getting turned on its ear. It's all in there, and we're going to discuss it. But before we do, it is time for
first, the old business.
All right.
Thank you, Gomez.
So, on this date, August 27th of 410, the sacking of Rome by the Visigoths. A three-day siege where they come in and just plunder the city of Rome. 1859. Petroleum was discovered in Titusville, Pennsylvania. It's the first commercially successful oil well.
Yes. Remember learning about that back when I first started in the oil field.
1859. You gotta wonder, like, obviously they were trying, you know, they were powering machines, but, you know, back in the day when gas stations, there were no gas stations, there was, like, little mobile pumpers. You'd, like, wave to a guy who had a bucket of gasoline, and he'd go over and, like, pump it
right
into your car. So, you know, my, how the world has changed.
Yeah.
But in 1859, this is a pretty big one. In 1883 on this date, Krakatoa exploded. Four eruptions destroyed the island of Krakatoa and led to years of climate change. Volcanoes blow, when they blow their top, the effect is felt all over the world.
Yeah.
All right, we just celebrated the anniversary. Well, we didn't celebrate the anniversary of shit, but we just passed the anniversary of Hurricane Harvey here in Houston. All kinds of devastation, you know, flooded houses, lots of people died. On this date in 1893 was the Sea Islands Hurricane. It hit Georgia, and between 1,000 and 2,000 people were killed.
Just real quick segue. We're watching They Call Me Bruce from the 80s in the background right now. And there's some Ivory Snow boxes in the background. Remember Ivory Snow detergent? Wasn't that the one that Linda Lovelace was on the box?
I think so.
Yeah, it's that box is in the background right now.
I love when you watch old movies and you see old products.
Because commercials used to be a big deal back in the day, is where they are today. And you just said, there it is. Just, I remember that was so well.
All right. On this date in 1928, the Kellogg Brand Pact. What do you think the Kellogg Brand Pact did?
I don't know. What did that do?
It outlaws war. Like, as a, like, kind of as a UN thing. Like, it outlaws war as a solution to international problems. Again, this is 1928. So,
pre-World War One.
It's pre-World War Two. It's post-World War One. Yeah. But at this point, you know, the world, 10 years later, the world would be in World War II. But at this point, the Kellogg Brand Pact outlaws war. 61 countries sign it. And interestingly enough, some of the first signings, Germany, Italy, Japan, followed by the United States, Britain, and Russia.
They had their plans already in place. They're trying to cover themselves. They won't come after us. We'll sign this.
And in 1939, the first flight of a turbojet Hinkel HE-178. It was a German aircraft. It's the first jet aircraft. 1939.
Wow.
Yeah. So did you hear about the guy in Seattle?
The guy that got in a fight with his wife and said, I'm going to show her.
He flew,
flew a plane into the goddamn house.
No, not that guy. There's another guy that did that.
Okay, yeah.
No, there's a guy.
Yeah, the other guy that killed himself.
He stole the airplane and did a whole bunch of loop-de-loops and then crashed into an island off Seattle. Insanity. But they scrambled the F-15s. But obviously everybody's trying to rework their security.
Right.
Because, man, if you can just grab a plane and
take off.
Okay. Notable births. On this date in 1906, the inspiration for so many horror movies, Ed Gein was born.
Yes. It probably 3 times out of 10, if you see a horror movie that says based on a true story, they're somehow tying it to Ed Gein.
Yep. Well, and when we did our serial killers episode, he doesn't even technically qualify as a serial killer because he killed two people.
Two people, yeah.
But
everything else was just bodies he dug up.
The descriptions of the stuff that was in his house was worse than so many other things that we were describing.
It was the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Yeah. It's insane, man.
On this date in 1908, President Lyndon Baines Johnson, LBJ, was born. Take that for what it's worth. Do you think he killed Kennedy?
No, it was the comedian. I watched Watchmen recently, I'm sorry.
Who's the smoking man on X-Files. He's the one that did it.
I love Watchmen so much, man. I found a cut that had an extra 30 minutes in the movie, so I had to watch it again today.
Did you ever read that book?
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember whenever it had been out, but when I started getting back, and when I was in comics when I was a teenager, and Watchmen was just kind of all over the place, it was the thing. Mm-hmm. So I got that graphic novel.
Yeah.
Read it, and it was
somewhere around here.
It was like, that was a major game changer. It's, you know.
Well, yes, it's credited as something that changed the face of comic books.
Right. Well, it started making like superheroes, you know. Prior to Watchmen, Superman's biggest problem was Lois Lane discovering his true identity. Mm-hmm. But Watchmen took all of that mythos, all of the concept of superpowers and responsibility, and put them into a real-world situation where they're actually dealing with geopolitical issues.
Yeah.
And what do you do with that kind of power? And how, you know, whenever there is a super powerful being. You know, obviously it wasn't Superman, it was Dr. Manhattan.
Manhattan, yeah.
Which, technically, I guess Manhattan's probably more powerful than Superman.
They called him a god at one point.
Because he could just change reality and make Superman not exist.
Yeah.
So, but whenever you have that, you want to make sure he's at least somewhat on your side. you would hope.
Right.
You know, like, they did the Red Sun stuff with the superheroes as Elseworlds, where what happened if Superman hadn't landed in Kansas, but what if he landed in Siberia and become a Soviet super soldier? And the way the world would be different and stuff. The Watchmen changed so much as far as bringing those people to life and making them real. And
the only thing I don't like about that movie, because, you know, I just, even if a movie doesn't hold true to a comic book or to the narrative of a book, when it's a book that I truly love and enjoy, I just like seeing it, you know, personified and brought to the screen. So I love the movie. But it still pisses me off that Alan Moore is not credited in that movie at all.
They tried to. He refused.
He refused. Okay. Yeah. That is why. Okay. So I didn't realize that.
Yeah. He refuses any credits. He says, take my name off that. I don't want a part of it.
He changed the face of comics. The man is an icon.
He doesn't believe... Well, I mean, he is a persnickety old fart. But yeah. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not defending Alan Moore. I mean, I would defend him as far as, like, his opinions and stuff. But... He does not believe, and he didn't believe, that he believes that the story was told best in the format it was told in, and he doesn't like adaptations of his work. So therefore, no, it's good the way it is. This is as it should exist. Leave it alone. And they're like, nope, we're making a movie. And he's like, well, then take my name off it. I don't want to be involved, because he's just like that. He's got that artist brain about him, and hey, more power to him, you know.
I want my son to watch it now that he's 19. I told him, I said, it's an adult version of The Incredibles. You'll enjoy it.
It's also got Malin Ackerman getting it on in the spaceship.
Yeah, he's like I said, he's 19.
All right, and this date in 1924, Ira Levin. Best known for Rosemary's Baby. You ever see that or read that book?
I remember that when I was young. I haven't seen it in a long time, but...
I read that book, and then I watched the movie, and it's weird. Like, we were just talking about movie adaptations. The movie is probably far and away more popular than the book ever was.
Yeah.
But there is a tension in the book. It's like... They did it in the movie to an extent, but there's like this... They didn't let her sleep. And, like, you never quite knew what was going on, and she's being paranoid, and her husband is, like, he's, like, really nice sometimes, and then somewhat distant other times, but sometimes almost in the same scene.
Uh-huh.
And she thinks she's going nuts the whole time, but she just knows something's terribly wrong, and you don't know what it is till the end, whenever the little satanic cult starts revealing itself. To the fact that, like, she has been playing host to this thing that it's nuts. It's nuts. Good book. If you can get that book, read it. The movie's all right, but the book is incredible. Okay. All right, notable deaths on this date in 1976. Not 1976, 1967, sorry. Brian Epstein of the Beatles. He wasn't in the Beatles, but he was the manager that got them to where they were.
Okay.
He's the one that created the Beatles. He's the one that put them together, told them how to dress, how to wear their hair, how to smile for the camera, how to say things and do things, what songs went on to records, what didn't. He's the one that created the Beatles and made them what they were. And he died of an overdose in 1967.
Okay.
Barbiturates. And on this date in 1990, Mr. Stevie Ray Vaughan.
The sky is crying.
Let's pour one out for Stevie.
Can't tell you how many times I've listened to Stevie Ray Vaughan in pool halls across the country.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think there's an unwritten law that if you're in a pool hall, you have to hear Hotel California. And you have to hear either Texas Flood or If the House is a Rockin'. Like one of those two. And that is it for old business. So we'll take a break and we will be back with some more.
Somewhere on the abandoned highways of tomorrow, where law is another word for vengeance. Where justice is a forgotten memory. And order lies shattered in the ruins of civilization.
I am a Rucker!
Somewhere up ahead, a hero is waiting. Max. The crack interceptor for the main force patrol. Power is a badge of bronze.
The Night Rider. Remember him when you look at the night sky.
We know who you are, Bronze!
We remember the Night Rider!
His friends, where did they run to get you?
Get out of here.
His only weapon, 600 horses of fuel-injected machinery. His mission is a non-stop, high-torque pursuit of speed-crazed bandits.
Bronze, kill our pride.
I'm scared, thief. I'm beginning to enjoy it.
Down the top shelf! You're a winner, Max!
Crazy about you.
We know who you are!
They've broken his wife. They've killed his best friend.
People don't believe in heroes anymore.
They've pushed him too far.
We're gonna give them back their heroes!
Mad Max. The last law in a world gone out of control. Every day is a duel. Every life is on the line. And every turn in the road brings you face to face with a new kind of terror. Mad Max. Pray that he's out there. Somewhere.
And we're back. Here we are. Now it's time for a little bit of the...
New business is new business, and this is new business.
All right, so... Remember we talked recently about the Pet Sematary readaptation that they're doing? Well, filming is already wrapped. Believe it or not, they've already got it filmed. They're currently looking at a release date of April 5th, 2019. But what I found interesting is a photo was recently shared by the assistant director, Bo Ferris. You won't believe who is going to be playing Judd Crandall in this new adaptation. John Lithgow is one of the members of the cast of the new Pet Sematary.
See, Pet Sematary is one of those that I could go my entire life without revisiting, but if he's going to be in there, then I might have to check it out.
I'm interested to see what it's going to be like, man, definitely.
Pet Sematary is such a hard story to swallow. I mean, it is.
It's a rough one. It's like The Mist. It's just a really, really rough movie because it involves a child. And it just makes it hard, man. But for those that aren't familiar with Pet Sematary, it's based on the horror novel by Stephen King of the same name. Follows Dr. Lewis Creed, who after relocating with his wife Rachel and their two young children from Boston to rural Maine, they discover a mysterious burial ground hidden deep in the woods near the family's new home. When tragedy strikes, Lewis turns to his unusual neighbor, Judd Crandall, setting off a perilous chain of reaction that unleashes an unfathomable evil with horrific consequences. It is... The original Pet Sematary holds up to this day. It's a great movie. It's a rough movie. The book is even worse.
Yes.
The book is a really,
I read that
really
book when
movie.
I was like 15 years old, dude. And... I don't think before or since there's ever been a book that I sat there literally crying when I was reading it. Like, Not like here's a sad part where, you know, it's a long, drawn-out goodbye of the character you've been following for 1,000 pages. We're talking, like, the overwhelming emotion of total devastation and loss. And, man, I had dreams about that. Like, it was a rough pill to swallow.
Oh, yeah.
And then I saw that movie, and it brought it all back. And it's, I mean, it is a mean son of a bitch. That book is relentless. It's worse than Cujo, dude.
Oh, yeah, by far.
Well, Cujo, in the book, Tad dies.
Yeah.
Of dehydration. But, no, she did, like, Pet Sematary by far is probably the hardest Stephen King book to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. Because even with The Mist, the movie adaptation is the one that's hard. The story itself doesn't end the same way.
Right.
The movie is what is rough to watch. That's just... Good Lord. Okay, moving on. Don't know if... I know I was a much more bigger wrestling fan back in the day than you were, but we have said goodbye to another great. Jim the Anvil Neidhart has passed away at the age of 63. Former member of the Hart Foundation. He was a tag team partner with his wrestling brother. Member of the Hart Foundation. He passed away at the age of 63, unfortunately.
2018 is not a good year for wrestlers.
No.
But there's been a lot of them that have gone so far.
Well, the thing about it is you have that era of just greatness. They're all getting to their 60s and 70s right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the life of an athlete tends to be short.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. All right. So you've heard about the... I just wanted to bring this up just to talk about. But you heard about the NASA they launched this past Saturday. That little probe that would be going into the sun. Dude. Okay. So imagine some evil scientist at NASA put some type of basically nuclear man into this probe to where when it hits the sun...
Kaboom!
We're going to have Nuclear Man from Superman 4 show up and just start wreaking havoc on everything. Isn't that an awesome idea? Just want to touch on that real quick. Okay. Dateline Martha's Vineyard. Okay, so you're a photographer named Peter Simon, 71 years old. You've been doing pictures forever for a paper called the Martha's Vineyard Times. And they say, hey, we need you to go ahead and go to Lola's in Oak Bluffs. Get some pictures of the band. We want to do a little story about them. You know, go ahead, hook it up. So he goes over to the restaurant, starts taking pictures, and has to go walk to the bathroom. So he goes over to the bathroom. On his way back, guy grabs him from behind, turns him, slams him against a door. Tells him, "Do you know who I am?" And you reply back, "Do you know who I am?" And the guy is just furious about you taking pictures, takes your camera, grabs it, throws it on the ground, walks back to his table. And then, only then, do you walk back and realize, it's Bill Murray.
Oh, crap.
Bill Murray thought this guy was taking pictures of him when he was actually taking pictures of the band on assignment for this paper. And he called the police, you know, and they're deciding whether they're going to charge Bill Murray with assault or not. But yeah, apparently this guy has been banned from the restaurant now, even though he was there on assignment for his newspaper. The band wanted him there to take these pictures. Bill Murray apparently doesn't like his photograph taken.
Wow.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be funny? You know, you get accosted by this old band, you have no idea why, then you're like, that's Bill Murray.
I've heard some crazy stories about Bill Murray.
Yeah.
And like in a restaurant, he walks up and like snags somebody's fries.
French fries,
and like
yeah, I love
it's like
that
nobody's one. Gonna believe you.
Yeah.
It's like, well, actually, people believe that. Yeah. Well, even if it's not true,
he's
people still
a reputation.
Believe it.
You know, Chevy Chase recently had some incident where he kicked some guy in the chest or some shit for taking this picture or something. They're getting cankerous in their old age, man. That's what I got for new business today.
So I'm not exactly sure where it was. I think it was in Dallas, actually. This is a new business just because it harkens back to, remember Phoebe Kate's story in Gremlins about her dad? So there was a police chase up in Dallas or one of its suburbs, and the guy ditches the car and he runs into a grocery store. And the police go looking for him and they can't find him. Fast forward about a week and a half, 2 weeks, and
the smell
starts, they start smelling something really weird coming out of the columns of the front, you know, like the decorative columns.
Yeah.
So they think it's a sewer leak. So they call in a plumber, and he goes through and he breaks down some bricks and sees a shoe. sees a leg with a shoe in it. And apparently this dude went out the back of the store, crawled up on the roof, and there was like some entryway he could get into
the pillars?
Into what are they called? They're like, it's like the fake
columns.
Like you've got a support column that's probably made out of steel, and then you've got the fake, like you've got the bricks around it for decorations. Yeah. I want to say plenum, but that's not correct. But it's, anyway, he got into there and fell. And, just hanging out in there dead. So can you imagine, though, every day you're going to the grocery store, you're working at the grocery store, there's a dead dude, like 3 inches, not even 3 inches, like maybe an inch and a half of spackle and tile on the other side, like, at you.
That sucks.
That's some horror shit right there.
But one other thing to announce, you mentioned Dallas, is, of course, Texas Frightmare Weekend has announced a second guest announcement for TFW 2019, and that is the one and only, the
beautiful,
incredible, the still beautiful to this day, Cassandra Peterson, a.k.a. Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, which is pretty fucking exciting.
Yes.
So we got two. So far, we have two just icons of horror, Tim Curry and then Elvira. So that's... They're starting off with a pretty exciting lineup so far.
Yeah, and if those are their early announcements,
yeah, the big ones haven't come yet.
Because I mean, to me, Elvira is all you need. I would go see Elvira just by herself.
Right.
But those are the early shot, and then. Did you see Bob on Nerds of Anarchy? He had a VIP at his hotel.
I can't believe he did that, dude. I almost wrote to him and said, bro, you might want to delete that. Because those people usually have contracts where you're not supposed to announce that kind of stuff to the public.
Yeah, that's why I'm not going to say who it was.
Yeah, I almost wrote to him and said, I work with this kind of stuff. You're not supposed to mention shit like that.
But that was cool.
Yeah. But I still don't know what he was in town for.
He was with his band.
Okay.
He was playing with his band.
Okay.
But, yeah.
That's awesome.
And at this point, it's like 2 weeks ago. So.
He's one of the ones that's going to be at Horror Hound. You know, he's doing a circuit now. They may announce him for Texas Frightmare. I'd hope. That would kick ass.
All right, so new business up. Let's get into some apocalyptic shit. We'll be right back.
Seth!
I have the best week could ever plan.
James Franco's having a giant party.
Yeah!
This place is beautiful, man.
This place is like a piece of me. You two just stepped inside me.
You let us both come inside you. Yeah.
Boom. Thanks, James Franco.
Have you seen Michael Cera tonight?
What's up, Rihanna?
Can't believe people still invite him places.
Oh, don't touch my bumper, bitch.
It's a weird face.
So hot.
What the f***?
Too late for you! You're already in the hole!
Damn it!
Get off of me and see!
Ow!
The sheriff's office is urging people to stay in their homes right now.
Looting, rioting.
For all we know, the Lakers could have just won, and that's the reason why all this is happening.
I think it's the apocalypse. It's all in here.
And he opened the bottomless pit.
The sinkhole? Every single time I turn on the news, sinkhole in South America, a bunch of South Americans getting sucked into the ground.
Sinkhole to Maya.
What you want, son? We should just stay in here, fortify this bitch, and take inventory of all the food we have.
We got 12 bottles of water, 56 beers, Nutella, CT Crunch, a Milky Way.
Can I have that Milky Way?
No, you can't have the Milky Way. It's my special food. I like it.
I want some of the Milky Way.
I'd be pretty bummed if I don't at least get a bite of the Milky Way.
What you want, son? This is my game. This is my lane. Get out of the way.
you want, hun?
What the hell?
Watson showed up.
Give me everything you have to drink.
There are six of us. You cannot rob us.
Oh, Hermione just stole all of our.
What you want, son?
Brother,
we're here, man.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, as soon as you said brother, I pushed the button.
Okay.
So let's get into the Book of Revelation. But before we get into the Book of Revelation,
yes.
When you think of the word apocalypse, what does it mean to you?
The end of times. I mean, I was raised Catholic, altar boy when I was young, and that was just known as when things end, we get judged and we descend to heaven or go to hell. One of the two.
So that's the way I always thought about it, too. And you have apocalyptic fiction where it's usually like Walking Dead, the end of the world, and stuff right. Like that. So apocalypse has taken on this meaning of the end of the world. But in reality, the word apocalypse actually comes literally from the Greek word apokalypsis, which means unveiling or revelation.
Okay.
It's a revealing of secret knowledge, or of knowledge that is previously been hidden. So the word apocalypse, you think, oh, it's the end of the world, it's you know, that's because of the revelation of John that basically explains the end of the world through revealed knowledge. Mm-hmm. So John was given all of these prophecies, he's given these visions to speak about, and the visions he was speaking about were the end of the world. Technically, if you're given a vision that you're going to win the lottery or something like that, or you know, your secret lottery numbers, here, play these numbers, you're going to win the lottery, that's apocalyptic. Literally that's apocalyptic. It means you were given secret information that you can, you know, that is heretofore been hidden,
right?
So the revelations of John are revealing of information, and that's what makes it controversial, is because it presumes that this stuff is already known, and that you can go back and you can dig through the Bible and you can find these clues. Mm-hmm. Now we have to preface this with, this is not a real, it's not going to be a religious discussion. This isn't have anything to do with belief in or disbelief in. It's not meant to trivialize if you're a believer. It's not meant to proselytize if you're not a believer. It's just a matter of, this is a very interesting section of a very old tome that, unlike every other book in the Bible, it's either history, it's allegory, like tales and stories, it's history and kind of a guidebook, rule book, and it's kind of just, you know, it tells you where things came from, where they, how they should be, and how you should be in your life in order to achieve these goals.
Yeah, it's teaching you lessons from the stories is how to behave.
And then you get to the end where it's like,
By the way,
it's all coming down.
Yeah, no matter what you do, this is what's going to happen in the end.
So,
here's some horse hooves coming up.
So, in order to properly discuss Revelations, because Scott was Catholic, I was raised Baptist, you know, I'm one of the few people that I know that went to a Baptist church that was not all hellfire and brimstone. It was all pretty positive. There wasn't a whole lot of judgment or anger or any of that stuff. It was much more positive and up.
You were allowed to dance.
Well, I don't do that anyway. But yeah, they didn't dog on it. They, you know, they weren't anti-music and they weren't anti-dance. I'd say it was probably a pretty progressive situation for a small town church in South Texas in the 1980s, in the middle of the Satanic Panic. We were pretty on point as far as not scaring kids and making them. But the other thing about Revelation is if you read the Bible, you can read it front to back, or you can pick out passages, or you can go through it, but it generally follows kind of a narrative. So, like, the first words of the Bible are in the beginning, and the first parts of the Bible were like, this happened, then this happened, followed by this, and then this happened, and then this, and this, and this. And then, and you can kind of follow that all through the Old Testament. It's a narrative.
It's a timeline.
It's a historical account,
yeah.
When you get in the New Testament, it's a historical narrative of Jesus and his apostles and the people that followed him and the churches and different things and their impressions of things. But it's also told in kind of a verse, chorus, verse, you know, narrative, as opposed to Revelation, that completely flips the script and it kind of lands randomly. John the Revelator was given all of these prophecies kind of all at once. And if you want to say God just dropped the knowledge on him, he did. I attempted, because in order to do a show about the Book of Revelations, I tried to read the Book of Revelations.
It's not an easy read.
It's not an easy read. And it's not told in line. It's like this happens, and then this happens. But while this other thing was happening, then all of these things happen. And while this thing's happening, this stuff happens. So we had to go find a timeline, which the best timeline I could find was on Wikipedia, because it kind of breaks down like a narrative structure. So we're just going to kind of touch on, in this episode, in part one, what it actually says is going to happen and kind of what order. Because that's important to know, so that whenever you kind of get into where, you know, your end time prophecies, the things like the mark of the beast and the, you know, the four horsemen and all that stuff, kind of where do they land in the in the narrative. So this one's going to be a little bit more historical, kind of a little bit more canonical, just kind of straightforward. This is what Revelation says is going to happen. And then part two, we're going to talk a little bit about our impressions, our experiences, conspiracies, you know, for example, there's a passage that talks about the mark of the beast. And what is the mark of the beast? It says that everyone will be given a mark in their wrist, or, you know, on their hand or on their head, and with it you cannot buy or sell. And if you take this mark, then you are sending yourself to hell. You're damned.
Right.
Okay. There's all kinds of companies working, you know, your dog's probably microchipped.
Yeah, social security numbers,
those sorts of things, you know. So there are some modern day analogs to some of this apocalyptic stuff that kind of gets scary if you go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And since we're a scary podcast, we're going to do the best we can to scare you.
So, by the way, this Bible is actually the Bible I received as a gift from my Aunt Mary Ann, my nanny, when I made my First Communion when I was like 7. It's a huge, huge Bible, man. But it has Old Testament, New Testament. It has everything in it. And, of course, I have it at the Book of Revelation right now. So.
All right. So, couple of things. First of all, Revelations is attributed to John the Apostle.
Well, it's attributed to John. People assume it's John the Apostle that they're speaking of.
But I think modern discourse says that it's unlikely.
Yeah.
Because he's got his Gospels, and then the Revelations are
a separate,
completely different, right, and later on.
Yeah.
So the author names himself as John, but it's unlikely the author of Revelation was the author of the Gospel of John. And he says that the author never states that he knew Jesus, which is kind of an important footnote if you're going to be like, hey, I know what I'm talking about. I was friends with
the man himself.
With the man himself. The predominant view is that the Revelation alludes to Old Testament, although it's difficult among scholars to agree on the exact number of allusions or the allusions themselves. Revelation rarely quotes directly, yet almost every verse alludes or echoes older scriptures. Over half the references stem from Daniel, Ezekiel, Psalms, and Isaiah, with Daniel providing the largest number of in proportion to length, and Ezekiel standing out as the most influential. So that's why, if you think of the Bible as a website, it's extremely well hyperlinked. Like, there's so many references to other verses within the Bible and through the Bible, and Revelation kind of is the hub of all the prophetic stuff. So whenever they're like, oh, something's going to burn, Revelation is talking about that and gives great detail about how that's going to come to pass. Let's see. It's also marked by repetition of phrases, which is unusual for the whole rest of the Bible. And the arrangement of subject matter into blocks. Much use is made of numbers, especially the number 7, which represented perfection according to ancient numerology. Mm-hmm. But there's a lack of consensus among scholars about the structure. So, as a little aside, you'll hear Christians believe that, you know, for example, there's going to be an Antichrist, and the Antichrist is going to come, and he's going to impose all of these rules, and the Christians are going to have to either submit to these rules or be persecuted. That is one school of thought. The other school of thought is that they're going to be taken up into heaven long before the Antichrist appears,
right,
and they won't have to deal with it. The current Christians that are on the ground will, but the ones that are current, that exist whenever prior to his rise, will be raptured.
Yeah.
And there's no long-standing consensus about which one of those is actually true, because the book itself does not lay itself out in a narrative. So they say this is going to happen and this is going to happen,
but not what order is going to happen in.
Right. So it gets very confusing. So, what you got?
No.
All right. So again, this comes from Wikipedia. It's a rather long outline. I'm going to try to do it as succinctly as I can. But basically, this is an outline of events as they are thought to be in order. So it's not the order of revelations, it's the order of the events as...
Take all the events, how they should concur.
How they should lay out. So you got part one is the revelation of Jesus Christ. Revelation is communicated to John through prophetic visions. John is instructed by the one like a son of man to write all that he hears and sees to the 7 churches of Asia.
Yes.
The appearance of the one like a son of man is given, and he reveals what the 7 stars and the 7 lampstands represent. So these are the messages for the 7 churches of Asia. The church of Ephesus. From this church, those who overcome are granted to eat from the tree of life, which is in the midst of paradise of God. They're praised for not putting up with those who are evil, testing those who say that they're apostles and who aren't, finding them to be liars, hating the deeds of the Nicolaitans, which I don't know who those guys are, and having...
You better watch Nickelodeon.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
And having persevered and possessing patience. They're admonished to do the first works and repent for having left their first love. To the church of Smyrna. From this church, those who are faithful until death will be given the crown of life. Those who overcome shall not be hurt by the second death. Praised for being rich while impoverished and in tribulation, admonished not to fear the synagogue of Satan, nor a 10-day tribulation of being thrown into prison. Number 3, Church of
Pergamum.
From this church, those who overcome will be given the hidden manna to eat and a white stone with a secret name on it. They're praised for holding fast to my name, not denying my faith, even in the days of Antipas, and they're my faithful martyrs. Admonished to repent for having held the doctrine of Baal, who taught Balak to put stumbling block before the children of Israel, eating things sacrificed to idols, committing sexual immorality, and holding the doctrine of the Nicolaitans. Again, we gotta look those guys up.
Yeah. Yeah, I checked my dictionary right here, and it wasn't in there, so.
To the church of Thyatira. From this church, those who overcome until the end will be given power over the nations in order to dash them to pieces with the rule of the rod of iron. They will also be given the morning star. They're praised for their works of love, service, and faith, admonished to repent for allowing a prophetess to promote sexual immorality and to eat things sacrificed to the gods. So again, they're given things that they're being praised for, but they're also given stuff that they have to apologize for. They have to repent for these things in order for these good things to happen to them. To the Church of Sardis. From this church, those who overcome will be clothed in white garments, and their names will not be blotted from the Book of Life. Their names will also be confessed before the Father and his angels. They're admonished to be watchful and strengthened, since their works have not been perfect before God. But that's the only thing, so they kind of got off easy. The Church of Philadelphia. From this church, those who overcome will be made a pillar in the temple of God, having the name of God and the name of City of God, New Jerusalem, and the Son of God's new name. Praise for having some strength, keeping word, and having not denied, reminded to hold fast what they have so that no one can take their crown.
Just real quick, essentially Nicolaitans are heretics. In those two particular cities.
Are they a group of heretics, or are they just heretics in general?
Heretics in general.
Okay. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
You're not living the life of the crime.
Right.
With all those heathens. Okay.
Philadelphia.
Lacodicea. From this church, those who overcome will be granted the opportunity to sit with the Son of God on his throne. Admonished to be zealous and repent from being lukewarm, they're instructed to buy the gold refined in the fire, that they may be rich, to buy white garments, so that they may be clothed, so that the shame of their nakedness would not be revealed, to anoint their eyes, so that they may see.
They got it kind of rough.
Yeah, they got to do some stuff.
Since you can't be all or one, screw you.
Okay, then before the throne of God. The throne of God appears, surrounded by 24 thrones with 24 elders seated in them. And then the four living creatures are introduced. We will get to those. A scroll with seven seals is presented and is declared that the Lion of the tribe of Judah from the root of David is the only one worthy to open the scroll. When the Lamb having seven horns and seven eyes took the scroll...
Think about that for a second. The Lamb having seven horns and seven eyes. It's creepy. It's the first creepiness that we get. It's the first H.P. Lovecraft type stuff that pops up.
True. Now, you also have to kick back into like additional in like mythology. So much of this has been lost to like, not, I'm not saying more than an interpretation, but the fact that this stuff isn't really studied anymore.
Uh-huh.
You had old like Mesopotamian gods, and it says like, oh, he had eyes all around his head. He didn't have literal eyes all around his head. What it meant was that he could see things that other people couldn't see. He was wise.
Right.
He could see, like, whenever, like, I've got the eyes in the back of my head, I can see past that. I'm far-seeing. These are mythological terms for wisdom and stuff. So whoever the Lamb with seven eyes means that he's probably a really, really smart person.
Well, it says that the eyes are the seven spirits of God sent to all parts of the world. So it's symbolic.
Right. So then, now we get into where the movies start kicking. The seven seals are opened. The first seal, a white horse appears, whose crowned rider has a bow with which to conquer. The second seal, a red horse appears, whose rider is granted a great sword to take peace from the earth. He's war.
Yeah.
Third seal, a black horse appears, whose rider has a pair of balances in his hand, where a voice then says, a measure of wheat for a penny, and three measures of barley for a penny, and see thou hurt not the oil and the wine. Justice. And the fourth seal, a pale horse appears, on whose rider is death, and Hades follows with him, Death is granted a fourth part of the earth to kill with sword and hunger, with death and with the beasts of the earth.
And those would be what is known more popularly as the four horsemen of the apocalypse, which has been a symbol in movies for a long, long time. I mean, they were featured in the movie Elf with Will Ferrell. They were the four horsemen of the apocalypse that were in there, man. It's a scary group.
Well, and what you have is you have war, famine, plague, pestilence, and death.
Yeah.
So usually those guys hang out together. Anywhere you're going to have one, you're generally going to have the others. Mm-hmm. Plague causes war, you know. Pestilence causes war and famine. Famine causes war and disease. War causes famine and pestilence, and all of those things cause death. So anytime you have war, and in the last 100 years, we've had a couple of pretty significant ones. So and the often ignored fifth seal. Under the altar appeared the souls of the martyrs for the word of God who cry out for vengeance. They are given white robes and told to rest until the martyrdom of their brothers is completed. Mm-hmm. Sixth seal. There occurs a great earthquake, where the sun becomes black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon like blood. The stars of heaven fall to the earth, and the sky recedes like a scroll being rolled up. Every mountain and island is moved out of place. The people of the earth retreat to caves and mountains. The survivors call upon the mountains and the rocks to fall on them so as to hide them from the wrath of God. So it gets so bad, you're praying for
a cave-in to protect you.
To just bury you from all that's happening. Then there's a little break, and the 144,000 Hebrews are sealed.
Sealing of the thousands.
144,000 from the 12 tribes are sealed as servants of God on their foreheads. A great multitude stand before the throne of God who come out of the great tribulation, clothed with robes made of white in the blood of the Lamb, and having palm branches in their hands. The seventh seal introduces the seven trumpets. So you think it's getting bad.
Seven trumpets, yeah. It's about to get worse.
So silence in heaven for about half an hour. Seven angels are given each trumpets. An eighth angel takes a golden censer filled with fire from the heavenly altar and throws it to the earth. What follows are peals of thunder, rumblings, flashes of lightning, and an earthquake. After the eighth angel has devastated the earth, the seven angels introduced in the first part are prepared to sound their trumpets.
And each one is bad.
It's not good.
Just real quick segue, the reason I jumped just now, I just recognize, it's funny, we were just talking about him when we were outside a little while ago. This movie has a young Dick DeRock in it.
Oh, yeah?
Swamp Thing, yeah. He has a part. He's right there. There's Dick DeRock, Swamp Thing.
Nice little break from the apocalypse.
Yeah. Okay, let's get us some trumpets.
All right. Well, here we go. First trumpet. Hail and fire mixed with blood are thrown to the earth, burning up a third of the trees and the grass.
The second, fire and brimstone, literally.
The second trumpet. Something that resembles a great mountain burning with fire falls from the sky and lands in the ocean. It kills a third of the sea creatures and destroys a third of the ships at sea. So, massive tsunami, probably a meteor. Third trumpet, a great star called Wormwood falls from heaven and poisons a third of the rivers and springs of the water.
Some people link that to nuclear meltdowns. Did you know that? They kind of say that's essentially what happens.
Fourth trumpet, a third of the sun, the moon, and the stars are darkened, creating complete darkness for a third of the day and the night.
Now imagine you're, I don't know, 6th century person, 8th century person, and an eclipse occurs. You're thinking that's the trumpet going off, you know.
Fifth trumpet. Now, the title of the fifth trumpet is the first woe. As if all that other crap wasn't bad enough. This is all in the fifth trumpet.
Yeah.
A star falls from the sky. The star is given the key to the bottomless pit. The star then opens the bottomless pit. When this happens, smoke arises from the abyss like smoke from a gigantic furnace. The sun and sky are darkened by the smoke from the abyss. From out of the smoke, locusts who are given power like scorpions, who are commanded not to harm anyone or anything except for people who are not given the seal of God on their foreheads from the last chapter. Damn.
But you think it couldn't get worse?
It's getting there. Sixth trumpet, the second woe. The word thing is like, woe.
Like, at least it's tragedy or something.
We're way past woe. The four angels bound to the great river Euphrates are released to prepare 200 million horsemen. These armies kill a third of mankind by plagues, fire, smoke, and brimstone. Now, you have to realize that a third of just about everything has already been devastated. So, 200,
a third of that.
200 million horsemen are going to come out and devastate whatever's left.
Now, do you have the description of the horses there? The horses are described as having heads of lions and tails of snakes. And they help destroy humanity as we know it.
Not good.
No. This is worse than Walker zombies. Yeah. A lot worse. Think about 200 million. That's 2/3 of the population of the country, almost.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
It's a lot of people. Okay, then there's a little interlude. It's got the little scroll. An angel appears with one foot on the sea and one foot on the land, having opened the little book in his hand. Upon the cry of the angel, seven thunders utter mysteries and secrets that are not to be written down by John. John is instructed to eat the little scroll that happens to be sweet in his mouth but bitter in his stomach, and to prophecy. John is giving a measuring rod to measure the temple of God, the altar, and those who worship there. Outside the temple, at the court of the holy city, it's trod by the nations for 42 months, which is 3.5 years. Two witnesses prophesy for 1,260 days, clothed in sackcloth. We're getting there. The seventh trumpet, the third woe that leads into the seven bowls. The temple of God.
Seven bowls are rough.
The temple of God opens in heaven, where the ark of his covenant can be seen. There are lightning, noises, thunderings, and earthquake, and great hail. And then we get to the seven spiritual figures. We're leading to the third woe. Again, as if all this can't get bad enough. They're like, oh no, we're just getting started. There are, like, if you think about it as an outline, yeah, there's like, it's like 1, 1A, 1A1, 1A2, 1A1, AB. It's like,
when you think about it,
every single one of these entries is bad.
At this point, we probably have less than 50% of mankind left. We're in total darkness, and we're being plagued by plagues and locusts everywhere at this point.
Endless war.
Hiding in caves.
Natural disasters.
It's like really, it's pretty fucked up right now. And it's about to get worse.
So the seven spiritual figures, these are the events leading into the third woe. A woman clothed with a white robe, with the sun at her back, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars, is in pregnancy with a male child. A great dragon with 7 heads, 10 horns, and 7 crowns on his heads drag a third of the stars out of heaven with his tail and throw them to the earth. The dragon waits for the birth of the child so he can devour it. However, sometime after the child is born, he is caught up to God's throne while the woman flees into the wilderness, into her place prepared of God so that they should feed her there for 1,260 days, 3.5 years. War breaks out in heaven between Michael and the dragon, identified as the old serpent, the devil, or Satan. After a great fight, the dragon and his angels are cast out of heaven for good, followed by praises of victory for God's kingdom. The dragon enrages to persecute the woman, but she is given aid to evade him. Her evasiveness enrages the dragon, prompting him to wage war against the rest of her offspring, who keep the commandments of God and have testimony before Jesus Christ. A beast with 7 heads, 10 horns, and 10 crowns on his horns and on his heads, names of blasphemy, emerges from the sea, having one mortally wounded head that is then healed. The people of the world wonder and follow the beast. The dragon grants him power and authority for 42 months. That guy is the Antichrist.
Right.
He's only one of the heads of the 10-headed dragon. But that's who he is. It's not necessarily Damien.
But it's still the Antichrist.
The beast of the sea blasphemes God's name along with God's tabernacle and his kingdom and all who dwell in heaven, wages war against the saints, and overcomes them. Then a beast emerges from the earth, having 2 horns like a lamb, speaking like a dragon. He directs people to make an image of the beast of the sea, who was wounded yet lives, breathing life into it, and forcing all people to bear the mark of the beast, 666. These are the events leading into the third woe. The Lamb stands on Mount Zion with the 144,000 first fruits who are redeemed from earth and victorious over the beast and his mark and image.
And the mark is the name of the Father written on the foreheads for these, as opposed to the 666.
All right, the proclamations of 3 angels. One like the Son of Man reaps the earth. The second angel reaps the vine of the earth and throws it to the great winepress of the wrath of God, and blood came out of the winepress up to 1,600 stadia. The temple of the tabernacle in heaven is open, beginning the 7 bowls revelation. 7 angels are given a golden bowl for the 4 living creatures that contain the 7 last plagues bearing the wrath of God.
Yeah, these weren't bowls of cereal.
No.
These were bowls of horror.
And they all get tipsy. The 7 bowls are poured onto the earth. The first bowl, a foul and malignant sore, afflicts the followers of the beast. The second bowl, the sea turns to blood and everything within it dies. The third bowl, all fresh water turns to blood. The fourth bowl, the sun scorches the earth with intense heat and even burns some people with fire. Fifth bowl, there is total darkness and great pain in the beast's kingdom. The sixth bowl, the great river Euphrates is dried up and preparations are made for the kings of the east and the final battle of Armageddon between the forces of good and evil. The seventh bowl, a great earthquake and heavy hailstorm.
Another one. The second earthquake. The first one drove us into the caves.
Every island fled away and the mountains were not found.
So at this point, no one on earth is not affected by this. Right. Everyone is dealing with it at this point.
The entire world.
Yes.
Aftermath. The vision of John given by an angel who had the 7 bowls. The great harlot who sits on the scarlet beast with 7 heads and 10 horns and names blasphemy all over its body and its many waters, Babylon the Great. The angel showing John the vision of the harlot and the scarlet beast reveals the identities and their fates. New Babylon is destroyed. The people of the earth, the kings, merchants, and sailors mourn New Babylon's destruction. And then it goes into the permanence of Babylon's destruction. The marriage supper of the Lamb. A great multitude praises God. The marriage supper of the Lamb. The judgment of the 2 beasts, the dragon and the dead. The beast and the false prophet are cast into the lake of fire. The dragon is imprisoned in the bottomless pit for 1,000 years. The resurrected martyrs live and reign with Christ for 1,000 years. After the 1,000 years, the dragon is released and goes out to deceive the nations in the 4 corners of the earth. Gog and Magog and gathers them for battle at the holy city. The dragon makes war against the people of God, but is defeated. The dragon is cast into the lake of fire with the beast and the false prophet. The last judgment, the wicked, along with death and Hades, are cast into the lake of fire, which is the second death. A new glorious heaven replaces the old earth. There is no more suffering or death. God comes to dwell with humanity in the New Jerusalem. Descriptions of the New Jerusalem, The river of life and the tree of life appear for the healing of nations of peoples. The curse of sin is ended. And then Christ's reassurance that his coming is imminent. So he hasn't even come back yet.
Right.
And that's the story.
And everybody's just fucked up.
All of it.
Yeah.
You'll notice that there was really nothing in there about a rapture.
No, there wasn't anybody. People were marked with the sign of God as opposed to the mark of the beast, but no one was actually raptured up into heaven to where they still had to suffer through everything.
Yes. Because the whole point is that you're supposed to keep the faith regardless of all of this stuff.
Right.
The rewards come at the end.
Right.
So you don't just get like... Now, before we get to the next episode, I will look it up and see kind of if there is a spot in the timeline. Because it is almost a little disturbing that that it wasn't in there. Because that's something that I know that a lot of Christians depend on.
Right.
They're like, we don't have to put up with this shit because I'm pious, so therefore I'm just going to get...
Swept up.
I'll get swept up before all of the stuff.
Bad stuff happens, right?
But there's nothing in that timeline that says anything about it.
The true test of your faith is this apocalypse that's going to occur.
So that's the timeline. What we're going to do, like I said, we're gonna get in next time. We'll get into like some of the conspiracy theories, some of the ideas of what these things actually are.
We're going to get into some of the monsters also, to some of the beasts that they speak of, a little bit more detail. Because just the pictures that it puts into your mind of these creatures are just, like I said, straight out of H.P. Lovecraft. Cthulhu, basically, is going to come. It's a tool of the devil.
And there's so many analogs with the different, especially in 20th century. It's like so often they say, okay, well, you know, Revelations itself, it's a description of Roman persecution of the Christians, which is a valid concern because, you know, they were persecuted. They used to wrap them up in oily cloths and set them on fire in the Colosseum. Mm-hmm. You know, they'd feed them to lions. I mean, there was a true attempted purge of early Christians in Rome and in other places. They've never... You can say contextually, like, you know, at some point, yeah, Christianity rose through Europe, and Europe was the dominant force, so it was become the dominant religion. But Christians and Jews both have had to pretty much kick the dirt and scratch and fight for every little square inch of the planet they've ever been part of.
Right.
And if you're like, oh, well, no, the government had... Well, yeah, we're not talking about the government structures that were in control of the people who were on their face had a like a coat of arms with a cross on it. We're talking about like pious Christians, because even pious Christians were not well liked most of the time.
Right.
So
they're persecuted in one way or another.
Yeah, I mean, even by other Christians.
Yep.
You know, either you're not believing it the right way or you know, however it works. I mean, so we'll get into that. I mean, we've already run long for this episode. just reading that outline. So, again, this is not an attempt to get biblical.
We're just discussing.
Except for what's cool is whenever you watch a movie, and it's weird, because even whenever you got somebody, you know, people who are, whether they believe or don't believe or somewhere in between, whenever somebody in a movie is like, oh, I'm going to get biblical, you know, they're like, oh, crap. They're like, they're about to get mean, because the Bible doesn't pull...
There's some rough stuff in there, right?
Yeah. So, hope you enjoyed the episode. Like I said, this is a little departure, because we're not usually so much just reading off the cue cards, but...
You got to lay the outline out before we start talking to it.
So I really don't know if this is going to make it into two episodes. It might make it into three. But the 100th episode won't be a Revelations. We're going to do a special episode for that. But, We'll definitely do a part two and possibly a part three. So stay tuned for next time, and keep it scary.
Later.
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend. The end of our elaborate plans. The end of everything that stands. The end. No safety or surprise, the end. I'll never look into your eyes again. Can you picture what will be? So live madness and free. Of some stranger's hand in a desperate land.
Yeah.